We're in lesson 23, and it's chapter 25. It's a very interesting chapter because in many ways it's just a summary of the end of Abraham's life. In fact, Abraham's life has taken so much of our time over the several chapters, and now all of a sudden, in one chapter, we're going to cover 35 years of his life. As we had ended in chapter 24 last week, it was a wonderful, wonderful lesson to where we saw how a servant of Abraham who went to find the wife for Isaac made several petitions of prayer to the Lord, specific petitions to the prayer, and the Lord answered those prayers specifically. It's a good example of how we should, in our lives today, pray to the Lord and answer and see how the Lord answers those prayers in our lives. As we pick up today in chapter 25, Sarah has died. Isaac has a wife. And so Abraham is at least 140 years old. And we pick up there in verse 1 of chapter 25 and see what happened with Abraham following Isaac marrying Rebekah. It says, now Abraham took another wife whose name was Keturah. And she bore him Zimran and Joshan and Dedan and Midian and Ishbak and Shuah. And then he goes back and talks about Joshan. Joshan became the father of Sheba. Anybody remember the queen of Sheba? Okay, descendant of Sheba and Dedan. And the sons of Dedan were Asherim and Letushim and Lemuim. And I don't think I pronounced those correctly, but none of the rest of us could either, so we're okay. Verse 4 says, and the sons of Midian. Now remember, who married a Midianite? Anybody remember a Midianite? Moses married a Midianite woman, and his father-in-law was a priest in the Midianite of the Midianites. He says, verse 4, and the sons of Midian were Ephah and Epher and Hanok and Abidah and Eldah. All these were the sons of Keturah. That's a mouthful. So in other words, Abraham was born, married Sarah. Sarah couldn't have a child because she was barren, so she gave Abraham Hagar, her maid, who became a concubine of Abraham, and bore for Abraham Ishmael. And then finally, 14 years later, Sarah has a child by the name of Isaac, and then Sarah dies when Isaac is 37 years old. 3 years later, Isaac marries Rebekah, and then after that, Abraham marries Keturah, and Keturah gives Abraham, lo and behold, 6 boys, probably some girls too. Of those boys, one of them gave him 2 grandkids. Another one, Midian, gave him 5 grandkids. Go back to Dedan, gave him 3 great-grandkids. Mercy. Now remember the promise to Abraham from the Lord that his descendants would be as numerous as the sands of the seashore and be as numerous as the stars in the sky. And the Lord is doing that in the life of Abraham, but not through Sarah yet, but through Keturah, the second wife. But there's an interesting thing. It goes on to say something else. Now Abraham gave all that he had to Isaac, but to the sons of his concubines, you see the S, concubines? Not one concubine, but more than one concubine. Abram gave gifts while he was still living and sent them away from his son Isaac eastward to the land of the east. We have an interesting thing that's going on here. There are some theologians in the past and some people who read these this passage that says, well, Keturah was a concubine, and so was Hagar. And we have a problem with that. And the reason why is because in the past, Hagar, when she was given to Abraham to bear a son, and she bore Ishmael, she was actually called, and you can see I've written it under there, it's a Hebrew word, Peligesh, I should say. That means concubine. That's just the word concubine in Hebrew. And then Sarah was called a Isha, or a wife, okay? And then Keturah, where it's mentioned here, is called an Isha, or a wife. But then we've got this next word, concubines, which is plural, and it comes back to the name that was the word that describes what Hagar was. So Hagar fit the pattern of being a concubine, but evidently after Sarah's death, Abraham took more concubines and had more children. How many children? We do not know. We absolutely do not know. But the fact is, Keturah was not a concubine. She was a second wife to Abraham. Well, as we go on, verse 7 says this. Interesting. And these are all the years of Abraham's life, and he lived 175 years. And Abraham breathed his last and died in a ripe old age, an old man and satisfied with life, and he was gathered to his people. So I've just kind of put some things together there in the last paragraph of the notes underneath that. It says, so Abraham lived to be 175 years old. Now, I've just summed up some other things. He was 75, he died 75 years after Isaac was born. So Isaac was 75 when Abraham died. That was 35 years after the death of Sarah. He had been widowed from Sarah for 35 years. 32 years since Isaac had married Rebekah, and 12 years after the birth of Jacob. Well, we haven't mentioned Jacob yet, so I wanted to go ahead and throw that in for you, okay? 12 years past the birth of Jacob and Esau, by the way. So here, the scripture actually does not tell us where Abraham died. Was he in Hebron, where the cave was, where Sarah had been buried, or was he in Beersheba? Because the last we saw at the end of chapter 24, he was in Beersheba. So we don't exactly know where Abraham died, but we do know that he was buried in the cave where Sarah was buried. And here's how we know. Verse 9. Then his sons, Isaac and Ishmael. Time out. Ishmael. For the first time in 71 years of biblical history, Ishmael has been mentioned again. The last time Ishmael was mentioned in the Bible, in the timeline of the story, was 71 years before when Abraham sent Hagar and Ishmael away. Ishmael was 17 to 18 years old. Haven't heard from him since. Now, 71 years later, Ishmael comes with Isaac, his brother, their half-brothers, and they bury Abraham in the cave of Machpelah in the field of Ephron, the son of Zohar, the Hittite, facing Mamre. We know who that is. We've studied that a lot. The field which Abraham purchased from the sons of Heth. There Abraham was buried with Sarah, his wife. And it came about after the death of Abraham that God blessed his son Isaac. And Isaac lived in Beer Laharoa. Well, interesting fact here. When we went through with Sarah's death and we talked about this field, there was a little bit, that lesson was a little long, so I didn't want to handle what we're going to handle right now about this gravesite in the field, this two caves in the field of where the forest of Mamre was, but also owned by Ephron that he was purchased for 400 shekels of silver. Remember, Abraham owned the well at Beersheba that he bought from Abimelech, and he owned this field with these two caves in it. Do we know where those caves are? Absolutely. The caves, location of those caves is the second most holy place recognized by the Jews. It is in the top four most holy places recognized by Muslims and Islam. So you see there, I've got a picture for you there. I've got it on the screen, but I've also got it here in your notes. When Herod the Great was alive, remember, Herod the Great was not a Jew. Even though they called him the king of the Jews, he was not a Jew. He was an Edomite. He was a descendant of Esau. We've not even got Esau in the picture yet. He's going to come a little later in the story that we're going to talk about today. But Herod the Great was a descendant of Esau. Herod the Great was constantly trying to do things to cause the Jews to like him. He's going to take that boxy old temple that Zerubbabel built, and he's going to embellish the temple. He's going to start that process. It's going to take many, many, many years. By the time Jesus has just been baptized, he's going to say just a few days after he's been baptized, tear this temple down, and I will raise it up again in 3 days. And the Pharisees and the priests look at him and say, how can you raise this temple back up? It has taken 46 years for it to get built like this. To this point, Herod the Great had set a plan in place and some architectural plans, and they were 46 years into the building plan whenever Jesus said that just after he was baptized. And by the way, that was in 27 AD, and Herod's plans would not be completed until 64 AD. So the work would go on for many more years, simply because actually what had happened in the 46th year, money had run out and they'd stopped building on the temple when Jesus, the year Jesus was baptized. And so they were having to wait for money to come in. Anyway, this Herod came along and he built a huge tall wall around the field and the caves. Some of you who've been to Israel may or may not have had the opportunity to go to Hebron to see this, but this is still today. Those stones that you see there on that building are the stones that Herod had cut and put into place there in Hebron. Of course, Herod the Great is so close to Jesus and all of that in the time frame because he's the king when Jesus is born, that later on after Jesus dies, a church is established there inside of the walls that went around the field because that is such a precious site to Jews, but it's also a precious site to the Christians. Now, when Herod built those walls, he did not put a roof on it. It's just open. Well, they came and they built a small church inside of it. A little while later, in the 7th century, after Islam came into power, they overran this area and they took this holy spot, which was the place of the burial of their father Abraham that they look back to, that the Islam people, Muslim people look back to. They captured it and they turned that little church inside the walls into a mosque. And then later on, during the Crusades, the Christians overpowered the Muslims and took the place back and turned and built a bigger Christian church there. With the Muslim expansion, the Christian expansion, they're putting a roof that's covering most of the area, still not all the way covered today, but during the Crusades, the Christians take it over, and then finally the Muslims get it back, and it's still in Muslim hands even today. So you can go and you can come from it with special permission at special times. And what's interesting is inside of that structure, they have built some interesting monuments. You see there the first one that has the green on it. You'll notice that it's got the gold spots. And if you really look at that circle that's in the gold, you'll see that is in Arabic that's written there. That's actually writings by the Muslims. That is the monument inside of this mosque that is there that is designated. They call it a C-E-N T-O-P-A-H, Centipa. It is a monument that is put there to represent Abraham, but Abraham is not buried inside of it. It is a monument that is put there to represent someone that has been buried someplace else. So that one, the one with the green on it, is for Abraham. As you look on, you see in the picture, the next picture, figure 30, those are those cenotaphs for Isaac and for Rebekah, one for each of them. They are not buried inside of those little monuments either. They're buried someplace else. Do we know where they're buried? Yes, we know where they're buried. They are buried in the caves that are hidden away from these areas that are down in very restricted areas that very few people have been able to go into. Actually, they are buried deeper than the floor level of this complex, way down into underneath the ground. Ground level for when Abraham was there, but Herod built up higher so that that would be down underneath. You can go and you can do some research, and it's very interesting because there's some very accurate records. We know that back a couple hundred years ago, that some of our archaeologists were allowed to go down into this restricted area to break through into a room, and then lo and behold, they broke through into another room, and there they found the bones of what they believed to be Abraham, Sarah, Isaac, Rebecca, Leah, and a few more of Abraham's family that were buried there. They sealed it back up in reverence, and they know that those caves were used to bury the dead, and they are assuming, and I believe it to be accurate, that they were this place of the burial of Abraham, Isaac. It's where we know that they were buried. Whether those are their bones or someone else's, it's kind of interesting. If you go and read, you'll see that we think of the bones being laid out on a table, being the bodies being laid out, but some of these bodies were actually put in a sitting position up against the walls and things like that, to where the bones were actually sitting up rather than laying down. So some of that, we don't know how to handle that, but at least we do know that this is the area. It has been revered for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years as the burial of Abraham by the Jews, and the Christians picked up on that, and so did the Muslims as time went on. So we go on in verse 12. It says, "Now these are the records of the generations of Ishmael." All of a sudden, now we're going to Ishmael in this 25th chapter. It's kind of summarizing some things up. 35 years at least of Abraham's life is involved here, but when we get into Ishmael and we get into his other descendants, we're actually talking about hundreds and hundreds of years are summed up. All that had already transpired by the time Moses is writing it down, but it kind of messes up our timeline as we're trying to figure where we are. We don't know when each of these were born. We don't know when their descendants were born. We don't know when they actually what would be considered strong tribes in the area. It says, "Now these are the records of the generations of Ishmael, Abraham's son, whom Hagar the Egyptian, Sarah's maid, bore to Abraham. Now these are the names of the sons of Ishmael by their names in the order of their births." So this is the 12 sons, the order that they were born to Ishmael. And the first one is Nebaioth, which is the firstborn of Ishmael, and Kedar, and Abiel, and Mibsam, Mishma, Duma, Masa, Hadad, Tema. Tema is very important. Tema is going to be the strongest of all those boys. He's going to have the largest tribe of all those boys. His city, his village, is going to be the town by the name of Teman, the town of Teman. That town has been destroyed right now, but that town in our future is going to be rebuilt. When we see the people from Gaza moving back down to rebuild Tema, it will be rebuilt into the capital city as the Edomites are going to go back and re-inhabit that deserted area. Right now, today, you go to Petra, it's deserted. You go to all these Ishmaelite original areas where they were living down in the land of Edom. They're deserted. It's desert. It's just ruins. But that's all going to be in the future, according to prophecy, to be rebuilt. On the Lord's return, at his second coming, he's going to make stops in Nineveh, Babylon, and Tema on his way to Armageddon. And in Tema, the Edomite blood that he sheds there because of what they have done to their cousins, the Jews, will splatter onto his white robe, so that when he lands at Armageddon, his robe of white has blood splatters on it. Not in Nineveh, not in Babylon, but in Tema, in the Edomite land. We've studied that as we've studied other things at the end times. And so Tema is very important. Jetur, Naphish, and Kedemah, these are the 12 sons of Ishmael. They are the names by their villages. Each one of them had a village. They went out, they married, they had kids, they developed villages, and by their camps, 12 princesses according to their tribes. It's kind of interesting because Ishmael has 12 sons. Isaac, his half-brother, is only going to have 2 sons. Jacob, the son of Isaac, is going to have 12 sons. Esau, the son of Isaac, is going to have 12 sons. Very interesting of how this works. Well, anyway, here are these sons of Ishmael, and they are going to become extremely important in the history that is going to go on with the Jews. Verse 17. Now, these are the years of the life of Ishmael. Ishmael was 137 years, and he breathed his last and died and was gathered to his people. And they settled from Havilah to Sur, which is east of Egypt, as one goes towards Assyria. He settled in defiance of all his relatives. I want to talk to you about this. You see this map? This is actually an ancient map. You'll see the word Havilah in several places. Havilah is the desert sands south of what we call Iraq, south of what we call Kuwait, south of what was called then Babylon. Sur is over in the Arabian Peninsula, and that is the word Sur, if you remember from a past lesson, means the wall, where Egypt had built this wall that went from the Mediterranean Sea all the way down and touched the Nile several many miles down, so that they would be protected from all the enemies, the Canaanites, that would be coming towards the Egyptians. Well, Sur and Havilah is all inhabited by the Ishmaelite people in defiance of his brethren, in defiance of his relatives. Now, if you have a King James, it doesn't use the word defiance. It uses the word presence of his brethren, or presence of his relatives. The word, the commentators that have talked about this are very plain. We take that word in the presence to mean that he's done this in the sight of his relatives, but the word is actually stronger than that. He has done this boldly in the sight of his relatives. He has surrounded his relatives, and these descendants of Ishmael and have just grown and grown and grown and grown. You know many of these tribes of Ishmael. You know them because in America back many years ago made a deal with these tribes and brought peace between the brethren. And we formed, as America, we formed a nation of them, and we call it Saudi Arabia. And all the OPEC and the oil and all of that is between these tribes, who are all descendants of Ishmael. Now, a lot of people try to blame the formation of Israel in America, but it wasn't America who did that. It was Great Britain who did that. But in that same time span, we did Saudi Arabia and put Saudi Arabia together, and that's the reason why we have the relationship that we do with them. And these are all descendants of Ishmael. Well, with that, we have just covered all this time. I mean, we've covered all this time to get to after the death of Abraham. We've gotten to the death of Ishmael. We've got all these descendants been talked about and what they've become. And so we've lost our sense of time of where we are in the story. These are really summaries to sum up what happened to people that we don't have where they were buried or when they died and all that type of stuff. So going on, it says, now these are the records of the generation of Isaac, Abraham's son. Abraham became the father of Isaac, and Isaac was 40 years old when he took Rebekah, the daughter of Bethuel the Aramean, of Padan Aram, the sister of Laban the Aramean, to be his wife. So we already know about that story because we covered that last week. Verse 21 picks up and says this, and Isaac prayed to the Lord on behalf of his wife, because she was barren. Have you ever thought about how many barren women we've already talked about? I mean, it's just one right after another. Sarah was barren, and now Rebecca is barren, has been barren for a while. And lo and behold, she was barren, and the Lord answered him, and Rebecca, his Rebecca, his wife, conceived. So Isaac finally decides to pray and ask for an answer from the Lord. How long has Isaac been married to Rebecca when he finally decides he needs to pray about something? Now, I have not put this in your lesson, but it really is a seed of thought that is planted here that I had missed coming into teaching this lesson. How long do you put up with something before you take it to the Lord to pray? How long do you just let circumstances go on in your life before you finally say, Lord, Lord, isn't this enough? Isn't it time? I love my wife. But there's a promise here that I'm going to have children as numerous as the sands of the sea and the stars in the sky. The promise was given to Abraham. And here Rebecca is and she's barren. Now remember, look on the board. Abraham, Hagar, Sarah, Keturah, and more concubines to get kids. But Isaac's not like Abraham. Isaac has one wife. He has no concubines. He has no maids that he takes. A concubine is a person, a female, that has been taken by a man for the purpose of bearing children. Now, let me tell you something. There are some things in this life that just go all over me. I just do not understand them. I do not understand in our biblical history why women have been treated the way they have been treated in culture. And why it was allowed. And one of the things that just bothers the snot out of me. Is that okay? Can I say that? The bothers the dickens out of me is what has been done with concubines. We don't think about it here, but some of y'all have lived in other parts of the world, and concubines are still taken by men. In the Muslim Islamic religion, a man can marry legally four wives. And he is responsible for those four wives until they die or until he dies. And there is a division. All those wives have an equal stake in the marriage. And all their kids have an equal stake in the marriage relationship and in the family. But in Islam and in the Muslim religion today, a man can also take four concubines on top of the four wives. And the purpose for that is for those concubines to bear him children. And at the point where those children become of age, where they are either married off or have married and take care of themselves and their own businesses, then the wives are freed, usually by the man, to get off of his payroll to go do as they please. They become the ones who live in the squalors and live in the poorest parts of the area. And they are put out. They're put out. Just like Abraham put Hagar out, these are put out too. The men do not have to do that. They can take care of them. But in many cases, they are just simply let go after their childbearing and child-raising responsibilities are over. They are done with. But they are property of the man. He can sell them. He can give them away. Or he can keep them. Or he can send them on their way and say, not provide for them again. I do not understand many facets of all of what I just told you. It just does not seem right in my heart that a man would do that with a female of any kind. I just can't bear it. But let me tell you something. Those of you who've been to China, those who've been to Japan, those who've been to any of the Islamic nations, those who've been to India, it is still going on. For those of us who live in America, it's totally different here. It's totally different. The world is not like the United States. Not anywhere. And I will just tell you one other thing, and I probably shouldn't tell you this, but I am. I'm going to get a little political right now. All these people who want to come to the United States, if they come here legally, I am for it. But if they don't like something going on in America and they want to protest, praise God, they can protest. Absolutely. But the moment they pull out their old nation's flag to carry it to protest in America, I'm against that. I'm against that. I'm almost to the point of I want to go buy 2,500 American flags, and when they show up with their Mexican flag or their Iraqi flag or whatever, I say, okay, I'm going to trade you this flag till you get through protesting, and then I'll trade you back. So they'll have those flags to trade with somebody else. Because you're don't come to America to live and bring the past that was failing for you that caused you to want to come here. Don't bring it into our country. Enough said of that. So here we go. Verse 22. But the children struggled together within her. And she said, if it is so, why then am I this way? So she went to inquire of the Lord, and the Lord talked to her directly. This is not a, oh Lord, I hope. This is, Lord, I want to know. And the Lord spoke to her, and he said to her, two nations are in your womb, and two peoples shall be separated from your body. And one people shall be stronger than the other, and the older shall serve the younger. And when her days to be delivered were fulfilled, behold, there were twins in her womb. Now this is interesting. You see the word struggle there? You know, when twins struggle in the womb, it's kind of like, even when you have just one child in your womb, mother, and you've kind of gotten in a bad position, and the child kind of sticks you in the ribs, try to say, hey, can you change positions? Well, you get two inside the womb, two, and you know, one's going, oh, you put your elbow in my eye, can you move it over? Can you know, that's a struggle, okay? That's a struggle. And somebody here knows about twins. Am I right? You have two sets of twins. Okay. They didn't come two sets at the same time, by the way. They came separately. Two sets of twins. You're a twin, aren't you? Yeah? Yeah. Okay. And you have two sets? You have a twin? One, only one? Oh, mercy. This is not the word that means struggle, like, hey, move over, get out. You know, you're in my side of the bed, get over. You know, how kids are. No. This is bruising and beating. This is the Hebrew word that means that they were bruising. They were dashing each other. They were actually fighting inside. There was war going on inside of the womb of Rebecca. She had a reason to talk to the Lord. A reason. Lord, what is this? She doesn't know she has twins yet until the Lord tells her. What is this that's going on, Lord? I feel I've got this thing going, war going on inside of me. Yes, you do. Yes, you do. Two nations and two people and two children. So, of those two nations, what's interesting? This is a prophecy from the Lord. Did you catch it? Lord told Rebecca a prophecy. Okay, after the bold letters in your middle paragraph there, I'm just summing some of that up. I'm looking down in history, kind of telling you. The Jews will be the offspring of Jacob. The Edomites will be the offspring of Esau. Jacob was the younger, Esau was the older. Esau will begin having children many years before Jacob. However, both will eventually have 12 sons. For many years, Esau's Edomite descendants will be stronger and overpower the Jewish descendants of Jacob. Herod the Great, an Edomite, will rule as king of the Jews at the time of the birth of Jesus. However, as in this prophecy from the Lord, Esau will serve Jacob in life and in death through his descendants. And we'll see that as we go through the story. Verse 25. Now the first came forth red. The first child born was red. All over like a hairy garment. This was a hairy kid that came out. A redhead. And they named him Esau because Esau means red. Edom means red also. And afterward, his brother came forth with his hand holding onto Esau's heel. So he named him Jacob. His name was Jacob. And Isaac was 60 years old when she gave birth to them. Isaac has been married to Rebekah for 20 years. Did he wait 19 years to finally say, okay, Lord, when are we going to have some kiddos? Before he prayed? I think he did. I understand that. My wife and I married in 1979, and it was 16 years before we said, Lord, okay, it's time for us to have kids if it be your will. We waited purposefully for 16 years. Now, I'll tell you something about not having kids right off the bat. For 16 years, time stood still. I mean, it stood still. Then you get that baby on the way, and it's like 9 months goes for the man. Now, for the woman, it's not so much. But still, time flies. And the next thing you know, the child is 5, and then 12, and then 16. And lo and behold, we've turned around here, and she's 20. And you start realizing, we're getting old. But when you don't have kids, time tends to stand still. You don't notice the gray hair coming. Some of the gray hair has not come because you don't have kids to give you gray hair. There's just lots of reasons for that. Oop, you had a lot of them. That's right. Okay, so here we go. So afterwards, his brother came. Isaac is 60 years old. They waited 19 years to inquire of the Lord, and finally the Lord answered. I'm wondering, was the Lord just sitting there waiting? Because she was barren. The Lord is waiting to answer the prayer. If you don't get anything else out of this than what I'm fixing to say to you today, right now, do not wait to ask the Lord for something. Do not wait. And by the way, just don't think about it. Well, she's barren. She's barren. She's barren. Need a job. Need a job. Need a job. Lord, today, lead me someplace where I can find a job. Happened last Monday. Last Monday, I needed to find a lady that we've been looking for 16 years to finish out distributing assets from an estate. I had found her grandkids. I mean, I had found this lady's kids, the deceased grandkids, but they didn't even know where their mother was. Finally, I found a street address down in Alvin, Texas. I told Jim Huddleston about this a while ago. I found the street address. And after last week's lesson, I did not want to go without taking heed to what I taught you last week. I left out of Sagemont Church, and on the way to Alvin, I said, Lord, today, because I'd been looking for her for a long time on my own, I said, today, Lord, and I had just found the address that morning. I said, today, I want you to help me, Lord, to find her so we can finish this up today. So I landed on the street, drove up to the address, and the land, the plot, was empty. She's supposed to be on that piece of land in apartment number 7, and there's nothing there. Lo and behold, it had been torn down several years ago. So I went down the street to where I'd gone many years ago for a dear friend of mine who I was looking for his sister. And she told me, and sure enough, I came to the spot and went to say, maybe it's that room, number 7, apartment in that little place. And that little place had lots of tools in it. And so I asked the people who were there, I said, do you know her so-and-so? And I said the first two names of her name, and they gave me the last name. They knew exactly who I was talking about. And they said, no, she's not living here anymore. She's living down at a trailer house on down the next block over. So I went down there to the trailer house, and no, she's not there anymore. And they wouldn't tell me much. And so I was driving out, and I passed this little church, and I said, Lord, she was poor, Lord. She didn't have means. I bet she showed up at this church sometime. So I turned back around, went back to the church, and I went to knock on the door, and I saw this lady at this other door. I said, ma'am, do you know where the church office is? She said, well, my husband's the pastor, and he's over here. And I said, may I speak to him? Sure enough. And as he's coming out the door, I told him what I was there for, and I said, I'm here to find a lady to finish up a will thing because she's got an inheritance. And her name is, I said, her first and middle name, and she finished her last name. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. She's been living on that street for over 20 years. She'd gotten a fight with her boyfriend, and this pastor had taken her to the police station 2 months before. Didn't know what had happened to her. So went down to the police station. Told her what I was doing. I said the first two names, and they finished the last name. Oh, they knew her well. They knew exactly where they had taken her. And they said, here's a number. Said, by the way, here's number two. You call this number. This is our police number into the Brazoria Women's Center. Nobody else has this number. They will answer this when you call and you tell them we gave you the number. And lo and behold, 2 weeks ago, they had taken her and placed her in Bay Area Turning Point over here. So I've missed her by 2 weeks, but I knew where she was. To which the police and the lady at the police station said, now you went down on that street by yourself without a police escort? And I said, well, yes. She said, we don't even send police down there without a police escort. She said, don't go down there anymore. We'll be glad to go with you, and we'll send two cars with you. Go down there. Well, everybody was so nice to me. I guess it's because I had money to give out or whatever. And they were the poorest of the poor, and drug addicts and everything else. And so I know where she is. I know exactly where she is. And she'll be contacting us. And I left message. And we'll be able to do this. But I asked for the Lord, that I would not return without knowing where she was. He answered my prayer. I actually wanted to see her eyeball to eyeball, but I forgot to ask that. Do you see how the Lord answers our prayers? But it's not always the way He answers them exactly as we ask, but not the way we intend. Be specific. Isaac finally asked for a child, and he got it. He got two. Well, and when the boys grew up, verse 27, Esau became a skillful hunter and a man of the field, but Jacob was a peaceful man. Now, that's not what that actually says in the original. Jacob was not a peaceful man. That's not what it says. Jacob was a plain man. The Hebrew says plain, not peaceful. There's a word for peace, and it's shalom, and that's not what it's there. It's a tom. He's a plain man. What does that mean? That means Esau liked to go out to the field and hunt deer and antelope, and he liked to bring back wild vegetables and things like that, where Jacob was a plain man. He liked to take care of the cattle that was already there, you know, the stuff that's already around the house and the gardens that already belonged to Isaac. He took care of that. He took care of the lambs and the goats and all of that that were already there, where Esau wanted to go out. Look what it says here. Now, Isaac loved Esau because he had a taste for game, but Rebekah loved Jacob. So here we are. Okay. Verse 29 says this, and when Jacob had cooked stew. Now the original actually says had cooked sod pottage. S-O-D, sod pottage. Esau came in from the field and he was famished. And Esau said to Jacob, please let me have a swallow. Hey, you know what? Did I skip a passage? I had to skip a passage. No, I didn't, but I need to explain it to you. I did skip a passage. Let's go back. No, I didn't skip it. Verse 26. Did I say verse 26? And afterwards, his brother came forth with his hand holding on his heel. Okay, I need to explain that because that's important, because that's what's fixing to happen here. Jacob came out holding on to the... Esau came out with Jacob's hand holding on to the heel of Esau. Jacob, the name Jacob means to trip by the heel. We have always said it means to deceive or deception or whatever that, but it actually means to like stick out your foot and cause someone to trip going down the aisle in front of you, to trip them up by the heel is what it means. That's what Jacob's name means, and that's what Jacob is about to do here. He is fixing to trip up his brother Esau because his brother is famished. He says, please, let me have a swallow of that red stuff. Or let me have a bite of that red stuff, for I am famished. Therefore, his name was called Edom. So Esau's name actually somewhat gets changed, because not only did Esau, was he a red-headed, red-skinned man, but he also wanted that red sod pottage, and that's how he sold his birthright, and that's where we get the name Edomites from. But Jacob said, first sell me your birthright. And Esau said, "Behold, I am about to die. So what use to me is the birthright to me?" And Jacob said, "Swear to me." First, swear to me. So he swore to him, and he sold his birthright to Jacob. And then Jacob gave Esau bread and lentil stew, and he ate and drank and rose and went on his way. Thus Esau despised his birthright because he had given it away, sold it away for some sod pottage. We know exactly what sod pottage is. Sod pottage is when they take some sort of red beans or red lentils. They cook them until they're nice and soft, just like we do for beans. They season them with some other things like leeks, onions, and garlic or whatever. And finally, when they was all completely done, they would take and they would smash it up. They'd actually drain the liquid off and smash it up so it'd be like in a paste. Why? So that they could put it inside of a leather whatever and hold the paste, and they could carry it with them and eat a little sod pottage with their hands. You notice when you see on TV, they're always grabbing their stuff and they're eating it, and it's just kind of mushy looky kind of stuff, kind of like bread dough, but it's called sod pottage. And that is what Esau had purchased, had sold his birthright for, that Jacob was mating, was this sod pottage made out of red beans, lentils, or something like that. Well, that kind of is interesting. With that is the end of chapter 25. The birthright is gone. It belongs to Jacob. And so we can kind of summarize some things like I have on the board here. We have Abraham's age. We have Sarah's age and death. Ishmael, Isaac, Esau. And now we've got Esau and Jacob together. I've added Joseph down there just for fun. But we're really right here somewhere in the neighborhood. How old was Esau and Jacob when they sold the birthright? We don't know. 15, 17, 20, 27, 30. We don't know how old he was. But here's the deal. Abraham is not going to die until Esau and Jacob are 12 to 15 years old, somewhere along in there. So now here it comes up. You know, I just feel like I have missed something in this lesson. Let me go back and look. Before we leave chapter 25. You know, I've already taught this once, and so I do not want to miss one important point. Do what? Was it verse 9? Is that where I am? But I won't go back. No, I do want to go back. I hate to go back. It's verse 9. In verse 9 of chapter 25, and I know this is out of order, but forgive me. The sons of Isaac and his son, Isaac and Ishmael, talking about Abraham, buried him in the cave. This is the first time that we have heard of Ishmael in the story in 71 years. Abraham sent Hagar and Ishmael away when Ishmael was 17 to 18 years old. And now, 71 years later, Isaac and Ishmael have buried Abraham in that cave. Where were the rest of the sons? They're not mentioned there. Were they there? We do not know. Well, with that, we can look here at the end of chapter 25, and I've listed a chart of the overlapping things so you can see. Sarah never knew Rebekah as the wife of Isaac. Sarah never knew Jacob and Esau because many years, 62 years passed before of marriage passed, so Sarah never knew about Jacob and Esau either. Just some interesting things. Let's pick up in chapter 26 and get through this. Now there was a famine in the land. What famine was the land? Besides the previous famine that had occurred in the days of Abraham. Okay, the famine in the land that happened previous was when Abraham was 75 years old. He had just come out of Haran, went into Canaan for the first time. The famine hits, and he goes down to Pharaoh. And down there with Pharaoh, he lies about Sarah being his wife. Remember that? Okay, that's the scenario setting up for this. So Isaac went to Gerar to Abimelech, king of the Philistines. Abimelech, we talked about him. Abraham went to Abimelech to Gerar and lied about Sarah being his wife and saying it's his sister. And that night, Abimelech has a message from the Lord, says, you are a dead man if you take her as your wife. Abimelech did not forget that, and he's going to respond because of that in this story. And the Lord appeared to him and said, do not go down to Egypt, Isaac. Stay in the land which I shall tell you. Sojourn in this land, and I will be with you and bless you. For to you and to your descendants I will give all these lands, and I will establish the oath which I swore to your father Abraham. So we've got an Isaac covenant here too that is a carbon copy of what was promised to Abraham. And he goes on to say, and I will multiply your descendants as the stars of the heavens, and I will give your descendants all these lands, and by your descendants all the nations of the earth shall be blessed. Because Abraham obeyed me and kept my charge, my commandments, my statutes, and my laws. Well, Abraham is keeping everything, or kept everything, that the Lord said to him. And we haven't gotten those written laws out anywhere yet, but they're in place. When Moses is going to write them down, they're not new. They've been put in place through these stories, by the way, through these lives. And so Abraham had done what he needed to do and had this covenant and blessing upon him. And Isaac gets the same covenant upon him and the same blessing. So going to verse 6 says, so Isaac lived in Gerar. And when the men of the place asked about his wife, what did Isaac say? Oh, my soul, apple doesn't fall from the tree, far from the tree. She is my sister. For he was afraid to say my wife, thinking the men of the place might kill me on account of Rebekah, for she is beautiful. Now, how old is Rebekah? We don't know. But as a maid, a girl, a daughter, they began to go get water about 12 or 13 years old. So Rebekah is probably, when the servant showed up to get Rebekah, she is probably 12, 13, 15, maybe 20. So we add 20 years to that, means she may be 35, 40, somewhere along in there. She's beautiful. She's beautiful. Isaac's over 60. He's not so beautiful, but she's beautiful, okay? And so, verse 8 says, and it came about that when he had been there a long time, they've been living there a long time, the lie is still out there that she's his sister, that Abimelech, king of the Philistines, looked out through the window and saw, and behold, Isaac was caressing his wife Rebekah. And Abimelech called Isaac and said, I can just see him. Now, Abimelech's an old man, and Isaac's old too. Old man calling an old man a liar is what's fixing to happen. Behold, certainly she is your wife. How then did you say she is my sister? And Isaac said to him, because I said, lest I die on her account of her, or on the account of her. And Abimelech said, what is this you have done to us? One of the people might easily have had lain with your wife, and you would have brought this guilt upon us. Abimelech has not forgotten the message of the Lord. Abimelech, you take Sarah as your wife, you're a dead man. And evidently, Abimelech has held on to this teaching about this, and he's not letting his people either, because he's worried now. If someone had taken Rebekah as a wife and lain with her, they would have been a dead man. In fact, he goes on to say this. He goes, so Abimelech charged all the people, saying, he who touches this man or his wife surely shall be put to death. Here's a seed of a thought, and this seed of the thought is going to grow and multiply, and by the time we get to Deuteronomy chapter 22, verse 24, it's put into law, and it's the law of the Lord, and it's the law here. It's the law with Abimelech, and we're going to hear about it when Moses writes it down. Any man, and here's what it is, any man who takes another man's wife to be his wife, the penalty is death from the Lord. It's a penalty. You don't take another man's wife as if she's yours. Not even innocently, you're guilty, even if you innocently do it. Because Abimelech had done it innocently. But he didn't have that sexual relationship with her. And the Lord blessed him because of that. Verse 12. And I do not understand this, because the same thing happened with Abraham, and here it happens with Isaac. Isaac's lied, and now he gets blessed. Now Isaac sowed in the land and reaped in the same year a hundredfold. And the Lord blessed him, and the man became rich and continued to grow richer until he became very wealthy. For he had possessions of flocks and herds and a great household, lots of people in other words, so that the Philistines envied him. Isaac had inherited everything that was Abraham, and Abraham was a wealthy, wealthy person. We might call him a billionaire back then. And now Isaac has taken the wealth that he's inherited and he's even multiplied it more. He is incredible. He is so wealthy, has so many people in his household that he's caring for, but and those people are considered part of the wealth also, that the Philistines are envious of him. Now all the wells which his father Abraham's servants had dug in the days of Abraham his father, the Philistines stopped up by filling them with dirt or with earth. Then Abimelech said to Isaac, "Go away from us, for you are too powerful for us." In other words, they were afraid of the army of Isaac. And Isaac departed from there and camped in the valley of Gier, which is the valley where the wells are, okay, and settled there. Then Isaac dug again the wells of water which had been dug in the days of his father Abraham, and the Philistines had stopped them up after the death of Abraham, and he gave them the same names that his father had given them. How did he know where those wells were? And how did he know what their names were? Because some of the men that he had inherited had dug those wells. They knew where those wells were. Remember, when Abraham died, the whole family doesn't die. There's always old men around who can say, right there's where we dug it, and that's what we called it. Right there's where we dug it, that's where they called it. But when Isaac's servants dug in the valley and found there were wells flowing with water, the herdsmen of Gear quarreled with the herdsmen of Isaac, saying, "The water is ours." And it was theirs. Isaac didn't own all those wells. They were dug by Abraham, but Abraham hadn't purchased them. So he named one of the wells Essek, and the other, because they contended with him, which the word Essek means strife. And the other well they dug, they quarreled over it, and so he named it Shiddah. And that means, Shiddah means, I just went blank, it means to hatred. And so they moved away from that area, and they dug another well, and they did not quarrel over it, so they named it Rehoboth. And for he said, "At least the Lord has made room for us, and we shall be fruitful in the land." Rehoboth, what does that mean? That means they finally found a place where they could dig a well, and the well provided enough water that it provided for all of Isaac's needs and all of the locals' needs, where they didn't have to fight over anything. It was a good, wonderful, flowing water place, a broad place. The word Rehoboth means broad place. Verse 23 says, "Then he went up from there to Beersheba." We know where Beersheba is because Beersheba is the name that means seven ewe lambs, which is what Abraham had paid Abimelech for, the well, which was the first piece of property that Abraham owned in all of the promised land. And the Lord appeared to him at the same night and said, talking to Isaac, "I am the God of your father Abraham. Do not fear, for I am with you. I will bless you and will multiply your descendants for the sake of my servant Abraham." So he built an altar there and called upon the name of the Lord and pitched his tents there. And there Isaac's servants dug a well. So we have a second time. We've got this Isaac covenant going to Isaac. It was the same as the Abrahamic covenant because of Abraham. And Isaac is going to be the recipient and the blessings of it. Verse 26. Then Abimelech shows up. Abimelech came to him from Gear with his advisor, Ahuzath, like his lawyer. And Philco, the commander of his army. Philco was the commander of his army with Abraham, if you remember. I told you we're going to come back up with him. And Isaac said to them, "Why have you come to me since you hate me and have sent me away from you?" And they said, "We see plainly that the Lord has been with you. So we said, let there now be an oath between us, even between you and us, and let us make a covenant with you that you will do us no harm, just as you have not touched, we have not touched you and have done you to you nothing but good and have sent you away in peace. You are now the blessed of the Lord." That's the same deal that Abimelech made with Abraham. because Abimelech could not overthrow Abraham either. And so then he made them a feast, and they ate and drank. And in the morning they rose up early and exchanged the oath. And then Isaac sent them on the way, and they departed from him in peace. Abimelech doesn't want to have anything to do with what's going on with Isaac. Isaac's family is too strong. Verse 32. Now it came about on the same day that Isaac's servants came in and told him about the well which they had dug. Actually, they had redug. And said to him, "We have found water." So he called it Shibba. Shibba. Therefore, the name of the city is Beersheba to this day. What well? By the way, the word Shibba is just another spelling of the word Sheba. It's the same well that Abraham had dug, and they had just redug it. Then lo and behold, here we finally have a time marker at the end of chapter 26. We know exactly where we are. And when Esau was 40 years old, he married Judith, the daughter of Beeri the Hittite, and Basemath, the daughter of Elam the Hittite, and they brought grief to Isaac and Rebekah. All this that happened with Jacob and with Esau and with Isaac and everything is leading up to Esau and Jacob are 40 years old. Now we're back on a timeline. Now we know where we are. Now we know that the year is 2191. 2191 years since the creation of Adam. We know that like Abraham, Isaac and Rebekah did not want their sons to marry Canaanite women, but Esau did. He married Canaanite women. Let me just fill you in a little bit what we're going to find out. Isaac is not going to die for another 80 years. Isaac has 80 more years of life. 30 years later, the twins are going to be 70 years old. See, they're 40 now. 30 years later, they're going to be 70. At that point in time, Isaac's going to be blind. Isaac's going to be blind for the greater part of his adult life, the ending of his life, for many, many years, several decades. Jacob is going to get the blessing instead of Esau from his father whenever the boys are 70 years old. Jacob's going to run away to Mesopotamia where he's going to be there for 20 years. And in the 21st year, he's going to return. In the meantime, while he's in Mesopotamia, he is going to meet Rebekah. He's going to work for her for 7 years and then get Leah instead. He's going to work another 7 years and get Rebekah finally. And then in the midst of the next 7 years or so, and I'll explain that when we get to that lesson, Jacob is going to obtain 11 boys and one girl from Leah, Rebekah, Rachel, and their two maids. Thank you. Rachel, not Rebekah. Leah, Rachel, and their two maids. That's going to be interesting. I'm going to show that. That's interesting what's going to happen when we get there. Okay. 21 years after he has left, after getting the blessing, he's going to come back and he's going to have to meet up with his brother Esau again. And it's just still going to be a struggle. By the way, that struggle between Jacob and Esau has not ended yet. It is still going on to this day. It's a struggle between the Muslims and the Jews. Lord Jesus, we thank you for this message. We thank you for your love. We thank you for your word. In your name, amen and amen.